I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the pumping on the right shares my beliefs. I think the pumping on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right. Good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. Boy, I'm glad to be talking to you at this point. This is one of those days where, you know, I've said it many times, I'm not a big fan of society. People in large groups seem to do some pretty bizarre things, but I really generally enjoy my one-on-one interactions with people. Yesterday was one of those days where you kind of rethink that. I had to kind of, you know, it's one of those days when you get done with work and you think to yourself, oh my gosh, people. What is wrong with people? And then I do a self-assessment. I always, I, believe it or not, from the show, I'm a pretty optimistic, friendly guy. And I started thinking to myself, well, you know, really, about 90% of the people that I dealt with were really great. It's that 10%. And I know we all go through this. It's the 10% of people in your office. It's the 10% of people in your neighborhood. The 10% of people in your on your team, it just doesn't matter. There is always that squeaky, annoying 10% of people. I'm a libertarian. I don't want to outlaw them, but if we must, we must. I was clearing off my desk. I'm not great with keeping things tidy. Particularly when I'm working and busy, I'll have a desk that's just completely covered in paperwork. Always have. I've clung to a quote that I saw or years and years, probably 20 years ago, that said the, you know, the smartest people, the real geniuses, always have a messy desk. I'm sure there's no scientific backing to that, but it sure gives me a justification. Every time I look at the mess I create, I just go, I am obviously quite intelligent. And it was funny, I was cleaning my desk off to set up my studio, my on-the-road studio, and I thought, I am like the least sexy Batman ever. You know, Batman or Superman, when something happens and they've got to change into their superhero mode and they leave their life of luxury and they suddenly go into a phone booth or into the Batcave and emerge. I transform from my regular day of paperwork and drudgery. I just sweep paper off and set up a microphone, and suddenly I'm a different person. It's not quite the same, is it? I want to start the show today. I can have a kind of a morose sense of humor. I find off-color things pretty funny, even kind of cruel things. Not in a mean way, but if they're really, really funny. If somebody passes away, particularly if it's a comedian. If I can find something funny about the death, I will immediately make that joke because I think that's how they would want it. But even with some of my friends, and I've given my friends carte blanche to make fun of anything about me right after I die, because if I can bring a smile to someone's face, even while I'm not here anymore, then it's worth it. Try not to be too personal about it, but anyway. I just thought this was funny. I saw somebody had posted this to Twitter. Said, my town had a really bad storm 2 days ago, and my neighbor lost the roof of his house. The poor guy doesn't have any insurance. I've decided to start a GoFundMe to raise money so I can go to Hawaii for a few weeks because he's about to start doing construction, and I hate being around all that noise. Oh, I loved that. Also ran across another post. These Twitter posts I run across are becoming a regular part of my quotes of the day today. Apparently, Joe Biden, I wasn't even familiar with this. This guy trying to buy his votes, and It's so transparent and disgusting. What a piece of human filth. This is Joe Biden. I guess he tweeted this recently. As I said, I wasn't really aware of this policy because I'm just not consuming a ton of news. I just kind of get the highlights. But Biden tweeted out, "Today my administration is investing $7 billion in a new program called Solar for All that will enable over 900,000 low-income households to have solar on their rooftops for the first time. Solar for All will give folks more breathing room and cleaner breathing room at that." This is Joe Biden's tweet. Well, excuse me, whoever's running Joe Biden's Twitter account's tweet, right? What we know, you know, I've always wondered about Trump. If somebody else is doing Trump's tweets or truths or whatever you call them, they've nailed his shtick, right? But he may be doing them. I mean, it's so good, it's very hard to tell. But we know Joe Biden is not doing his own Twitter account. And so he's rolled out this harebrained scheme. But what I loved is that somebody responded to this with something that was very, very deep thought. They said, this is Jessica Ellie Smith responded to Biden's tweet about his solar program saying, "Translation, quote, I'm blowing $7 billion of your money, equipping 900,000 of the most likely to default single-family homes with solar, so when BlackRock sweeps them up in foreclosure, they won't have to do it themselves." Isn't that about right? We know that's about right. Of course, I will add something to that. What I would imagine this solar program is, $7 billion for poor people to get solar panels is obviously a donation from anyone, anyone, somebody in the solar industry. Somebody in the solar industry is giving the Democrats money, donations, and they just wave a magic wand and take $7 billion from working people in this country through the theft that is referred to as, air quotes here in the studio, taxation, and they're going to take that $7 billion from you and give it to this solar company who's just going to slap these things up on a bunch of people's homes. They don't care about the energy. They care about the contract. If I had more time, and to be honest with you, more energy, and really, realistically, maybe even more interest in it at this point. I mean, the graft and the corruption at the federal level is so pervasive now. It touches everything. If I had the energy and the inclination, I should do a deep dive and try to find out what solar company within the past 6 months to a year made heavy contributions to the Biden campaign or to the Democratic Party, because that's why poor people are getting solar panels. The exact same reason that Obama delivered on Obamacare, because the health insurance industry wanted him to and paid him to do that. And they made out great. So disgusting, but this poster is right. These are probably going to end up being BlackRock properties anyway when it's all said and done. I'm probably going to do this for a period of time, a commercial real estate update, and it is all coming from this one Twitter account. If there's anybody interested in this, I believe it's a bit of a canary in the coal mine. Look, I am a Chicken Little when it comes to the economy. Don't come to me for investment advice. Don't come to me for any market timing. I am the worst. I do believe I will be correct that we're setting ourselves up for just an absolute disaster. But I said that for well over 10 years when they were printing up money and at zero interest rates. But the disaster is unfolding now, even though it doesn't really seem to be, you know, people are struggling. But somehow the government and the media still get away with saying we're not in a recession. We avoided the recession. I told you yesterday, I spoke to one of my Democrat friends, and she was talking about the fact that it was amazing that we have somehow avoided this recession that everybody was calling for. That sounds like some line straight out of the New York Times, which she does read. We talked about that too. But you want to hear some interesting, some economic stuff. Commercial real estate. I want you to listen to this. And I read from this thread a few weeks ago. It is by someone called Triple Net Invest. So if you go to Twitter and you want to check these out, because they come just about every day, Triple Net Invest, I want you to listen to some of these things. I am currently in St. Louis. So I thought this was kind of interesting, and it's the one that's pinned to the top of his feed. He said, the iconic 1.4 million square foot AT&T tower in St. Louis has just sold. The long vacant building last sold in 2022 for $4 million. Last year, the owner attempted to sell the building with a starting bid of $2.5 million. He goes on to say, for historical context, this building was sold by AT&T to a real estate investment trust in 2006 for, again, let me frame this correctly. In 2022, this building sold for $4 million. That's almost 2 years ago. Last year, the owner attempted, whoever bought it for $4 million, is now listing it at $2.5 million, and nobody's buying it. In 2006, AT&T sold this into a real estate investment trust for $205 million. That was a lot of numbers I'm throwing at you. I'm sorry. Let me say this succinctly. This building sold for $205 million in 2006. Last year, it was listed at $2.5 million, and nobody wanted to buy it. That is a loss of $202.5 million since 2006. An office complex in Skokie, Illinois, sells at a brutal 88% discount. It was purchased for $64 million in 2007. It just sold for $7.9 million. $64 million in 2007, now worth $7.9 million, assuming the new buyers didn't overpay. What else he got in here? A building in San Francisco just traded hands at a shocking 90% discount. 995 Market Street was acquired for $6.5 million at a public auction on April 18th. The previous owner in 2018 paid $62 million. In 2018, this building sold for $62 million. This month, it sold for $6.5 million. A 90% loss on this building. And the hits keep on coming. Building in Chicago just sold for $2.5 million. And, you know, with the price of residential real estate, the way it's been going up, particularly in some of the wealthy areas, because that's where, you know, the wealthy people get the first, when the Fed prints up a bunch of money, wealthy people are the first ones at the trough. So they've been bidding up all kinds of assets. So as expensive homes have been going up, commercial real estate coming down, pretty soon you're going to see millionaires living in skyscrapers all by themselves. Where do you live? I'm in the Sears building in downtown Chicago. It was cheaper than buying a single family home. This building in Chicago sold for $2.5 million. It last sold in 2013 for $22.3 million. Fort Worth, Texas' largest building is facing foreclosures just 3 years after the buyer acquired the building. It's going to be sold at auction. New York City office tower. It's priced at $115 million. 9 years ago, it sold for $270 million. So I won't keep boring you with this, but I don't think it's boring. Where are these losses? You know, as they tell us, it's the go-go times. Oh, look at that. Our economy is doing great. Interest rates went up, and still everything's holding together. Somebody is bearing these losses. There are banks that loaned money on these buildings that are going bankrupt. I assure you, somebody who buys a building and then loses 90% on it, they're not still paying off that loan. The bank's not going to have recourse to come after them for this stuff, or these things were already handed off to the bank and the bank sold them for 90% off. These losses are lurking somewhere in our economy, and I believe they will surface. It is a bloodbath out there in commercial real estate right now, especially in the large metro areas. There may be somebody in commercial real estate listening to me now that's really mad at me. No, it's a great time to invest in commercial real estate. It actually may be. You may be right. If you can buy a property at 90% less, at 10 cents on the dollar of what it was worth just a few years ago, it may be a great time to get into commercial real estate. Or you may be catching a falling knife. This may not be over yet. There are huge losses in commercial real estate. And what they say is, and I'm not telling anybody to panic, don't go running to your banker telling him you heard about it on the Mike Madison Show, but the word on the street is that the regional and small banks are holding a ton of these commercial loans. This is where they've made their money, is making loans on commercial office buildings. In the hundreds of billions of dollars, there are losses sitting on the books, not realized yet in a lot of cases, of these small and regional banks. I'm not talking about your small banks that can't make those kinds of loans, but maybe some of your bigger regional players. Trust me, J.P. Morgan will be fine. Goldman Sachs will be fine, but I bet they're not going to bail out every regional player that's losing hundreds of billions of dollars on commercial real estate. We'll see. Got to take a break. I'll be right back. Let the cold wind blow. Rough night in Jericho. If the walls fall in, guess I'll be saved by love. Talking about some of the danger that maybe some of these banks are in right now, I did a search during the break then because I was curious. I didn't have the numbers. I was just going to kind of mention it, but I thought, no, Mike, do your research and see. Edward Dowd, who's been very interesting, he's a former Wall Street guy. I can't remember if he was hedge fund or private equity or something, but he was a big muckety-muck in the on Wall Street at one point. But he's been doing a lot of investigation into excess deaths and mortality since the vaccine program rolled out. It's kind of interesting work. He has come out and said, as a former Wall Street guy, I mean, he's no dummy, that at the end of this year or next year, I can't remember what his end date was, but it was either this year or next year, he said there's only going to be 6 banks in the U.S. Now, you can only imagine how that takes place. I mean, a lot of banks have got to be just on their backs with their belly exposed for the J.P. Morgans and Bank of Americas and Goldman Sachs to go out and buy every other bank in this country. But I did know we've had a big decline in banks over the years. I thought I'd look it up during the break. They just ran across it, did a quick search. The number of banks in the United States starting in 1966 through 2017. This is the graph I run into. And it was shocking enough that I just clicked on it, and that was all I did. This is the Institute for Self-Reliance put this out. In 1966, it appears the number of banks in the United States was around almost 24,000. By 2017, that number had shrunk down below 6,000. It's a pretty shocking chart, but this is the consolidation that we've seen. And this trend has not done anything but go down since 1966. I take that back. It looks like early 70s, maybe a few extra banks, few thousand extra banks actually popped their heads up, but they were swiftly cut down. And then it is like a rolling hill downward. So we'll see. Going to be interesting times ahead, as they say. I wanted to get into some of this stuff. I ran across an email the other day from a local fella, and I'm kind of looking to get away from, you know, national politics as much as I can help myself. I got a couple of quotes of the day to set this up, and you know, I believe I possess a rather rare, it's not unheard of, but within the people that I talk to the most, I have a rather rare ability to see both sides of the issue, not agree with both sides. I'm certainly no I'm no wishy-washy guy when it comes to most things. There are things I don't know about that I have to think about, or I have to turn to people I trust to, you know, help me flesh out an idea. But I'm a pretty rock-solid freedom guy, get the government out of everything guy. But I can always kind of understand how people come at things from both sides of an issue. Even if I think they're coming at it wrong, I can understand why their brain would get there. And I ran across this email that Dan Carr had sent out. I believe he is somehow, I had asked somebody who he was. I'm not sure how I ended up on his email list. Somebody's selling lists around Jackson. There is probably four or five email lists that I've been subscribed to that I'd never even heard of before. So I know I didn't do it. It may be some of my friends thinking, hey, this is a great conservative. I'm going to sign Mike up to get their emails. Sometimes it pays off. This one may give me at least a full segment on the show. But Dan Carr sent out an email I wanted to go over in just a second with you. It's kind of about the, you know, the legislature and their need to try to control everything and scare the crap out of parents so the government can take more control and keep you safe. A couple of quotes along that those lines. This is Roger Ver. No idea who that is, but he said, quote, every time a government enforces a law without a victim, the person is getting arrested is the victim and the government agent is the criminal. Every time a government enforces a law without a victim, the person getting arrested is the victim and the government agent is the criminal. Amen. Thomas Jefferson said, quote, law is often but the tyrant's will, and always so when it violates the rights of an individual. Now, a lot of people think that people can't be trusted with their rights. It's never for us, right? We always think, oh, no, you can leave me alone. I'm a good and smart person, but we can't be given freedom to just everybody out there. People also think, well, yeah, they'll go off and hurt people and rob and kill. No, that's you don't have the freedom to attack other people, to hurt people, and to take their stuff. We're just talking about being unmolested by the government unless you have an actual victim at the other end of what you're doing. Drug laws are not about victims. You can self-victimize, but for those of you out there who are addicted to food, or it's always funny to me, the number of people who routinely visit the liquor store but believe other people can't be trusted with any other substances. Anyway, I tell you what, I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to get back here. I'll just give you the title of this thing. And actually, I don't think Dan Carr wrote it, because at the very bottom of it is just signed Brian. And so my apologies. I looked all through this thing to see if I could see who Brian was. Again, this was sent out by Dan Carr, who's a local conservative. He may have been involved or is a part of the Chris McDaniel campaign, or kind of one of his running buddies. You know, just it seems like a nice guy. I'm not really criticizing him. I wanted to kind of flesh out this article. I thought it was kind of interesting what's being proposed in this by either Dan Carr or somebody named Brian. Apologies, Brian. I just couldn't attribute it to you because that's all I've got on there. Maybe Brian is like Cher or Prince. It's just Brian. We'll do that when we come back. Stick around. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. As I say, I am somebody who can, maybe it's because I look for it. I kind of look for why people will react a certain way to a contentious issue and see if I can identify with why they might have that view, even if I disagree with it. I'll go ahead and stick my foot into it here. The abortion issue is one of these things. I know a lot of people, maybe that's an exaggeration. I know people on the left that are pro-choice. And they really, you know, it's a pitched battle between pro-choice and pro-life, or pro-abortion and pro-life. And I spend a lot of time with people who are pro-abortion, and I'll say, you know, they say, well, the right just wants to control a woman's body. And I will just tell them, they know I'm not on the right. They know I'm a libertarian. They know I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a conservative. I'm not a liberal. So it's not like I'm carrying water for anybody. But I will tell these people to a person, I'll say, I know a lot of great pro-life people, and not one of them has ever expressed to me, even in a private conversation, that their goal is to control a woman's body. And I say to these people on the left, you understand, people on the right, and there's some people on the left that are against abortion. There may be a few of them still left anyway. I say, isn't it isn't it laudable? Isn't it good? If somebody on the right believes that is a defenseless child inside the mother's womb, isn't that to be praised that they are so passionate about trying to protect that life? Because really, what could possibly be wrong with that? Is there anywhere in our society, if you really just stop and think about it, and I will say there's a lot of things, a lot of issues on the right with the trans stuff. People on the right aren't trying to control other people's lives. They are legitimately worried, and their heart breaks for young kids whose parents allow them to make just really bizarre, knee-jerk decisions about gender. It's not about controlling that child or hating trans people. It's about looking at the train wreck that could be this poor child's life, a child that doesn't know any better. And so I talk to people on the left and I say, how can you be really angry? Now, you may disagree with somebody on the right or anybody who's pro-life. You may disagree with them because you want to see abortion kept legal. But can't you at least give them some grace knowing that what they're doing in their heart is what they believe is protecting a child? Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I will tell you, it's pretty tough to break through on that. And the same thing on the right. I can understand, while I might disagree, I can understand some people on the left saying it's a woman's body, she can do what she wants to with it. Particularly when, if you see a fetus as just being kind of part of your body at the time, you just don't have that frame of reference to view it as a child. I can kind of understand why they make that argument. Again, I disagree with them on it. I do believe when you have a viable child in someone's stomach, it is now a different person and deserves protection. But I can see both sides of those issues. And it's the same with a lot of these things. And so as I read through this piece by Brian in Dan Carr's email, I can kind of understand where it's coming from, but I don't think it's a great idea. Here, I'll go ahead and get into the piece. Longest run-up on this show ever to anything I've done. This was dated April 18th. Wake up, parents! Your children can buy intoxicating hemp, even real marijuana, at nearly 2,000 stores located throughout Mississippi. In 2018, Congress passed the, quote, Farm Bill, unquote, that allowed for the cultivation and production of hemp and related products. Hemp comes from the same plant as cannabis, but does not contain intoxicating levels of THC. Until now! Exclamation point. Okay. I'm with them so far. I think it is a great idea to let parents know that in the stores, there are things that may not look, you wouldn't think you'd find an intoxicating product like that in a store that a child could access. Good thing to let parents know. I'm with them so far. Creative farmers have figured out a way to grow hemp such that it contains dangerous levels of intoxicating substances that are being marketed to children with products like Nerd Rope in stores with names like... Oh, okay. Let me explain that better. It looks like what they're saying is being marketed to children with products like Nerd Rope in stores with names like Pokemon and Candy Shop Cannabis. You see, I'm still kind of with them. You know, that seems a little targeting children. And as much of a libertarian as I am, believing that the government should take its mitts off of plants and dictate how we can live our lives if we're not hurting anybody else, I will be the first to tell you, as also a health advocate, that your child doing intoxicating things, be it liquor or drugs, prior to their brain being fully formed in 25, is a bad idea, particularly in their teen years. So I'm with them so far. Kind of nasty to name these things that might attract kids. This letter goes on to say, this loophole in the federal legislation is allowing these products to be sold all throughout the country. What is more, these products are totally unregulated. Here we go. This is where they start to lose me. There are no age restrictions and no testing requirements, so we have no idea where these products are coming from or even if they have pesticides or fentanyl in them. Again, that's true. This is always kind of the common sense argument for regulation. And even as a libertarian, I struggle with some regulations. I really do. It's pretty difficult to say just no regulations. I believe free market would probably ultimately sort everything out better. People might actually investigate, and I'll give you an example. People go into the grocery store and they just assume, because there's all kinds of regulations on food, right? We got the FDA, we got the USDA, we got all of these agencies that are supposedly keeping us safe, right? So everybody assumes when they walk into a grocery store, everything that's in there must be perfectly fine food for you to eat. Most people think, I don't have to do any research. There's nothing dangerous in this food. If there was anything dangerous in this food that was going to harm my health, they'd never let it be in there. They would have outlawed it already. You couldn't be wronger. The agencies that supposedly, air quotes here in the studio, regulate are actually handmaidens to big industry in these different areas. They take money from the food companies, so they look the other way, or they don't pay attention to outside studies, and they take the industry studies on things like aspartame and MSG and high fructose corn syrup and sugar in general. But people believe that because we have this huge regulatory structure that they must be protecting us, so I don't have to do my own homework about food. They're doing it for me. And so this is one of those things, too. As a parent, as just a thinking human being, I'm reading this letter and I'm thinking, yeah, okay, so if you've got children, you should certainly be warning them, hey, there's stuff in these stores. We don't know where it came from. It could make you really sick. You should warn people about it the same way my parents warned me about cigarettes and warned me about booze, and I ignored their warnings about cigarettes and booze. But you know what I'm saying. We've got a responsibility, and I love the idea of communities coming together and saying, hey, did you know our kids could get this hemp product? You might think it's just hemp, but it actually gets them stoned. I love the fact of parents communicating that with other parents and warning each other. The kids should not be getting stoned off stuff they can get in the grocery stores. But do we always, always, always need the government to come in and make sure that they keep us safe? This letter goes on to say a tiny speck of illegal fentanyl can kill an adult human. Again, you understand that the only reason fentanyl is even a thing is because of the drug war. The iron law of prohibition is that when you crack down on any substance like a bale of marijuana, the response is not, oh gosh, I guess we can't sell any more marijuana. The response is, ooh, we need something that's smaller, that's harder for the authorities to detect, and you get cocaine. And when you really crack down on cocaine, you get things like crack. They think, well, we can only smuggle less cocaine in, so we've got to make the cocaine really last, so we're going to add a bunch of junk to it. And you get crack and heroin. And when you crack down on crack and heroin, you find something where they're like, you know, we've got a product that will get people messed up, and it only takes a few flakes of this stuff. We can smuggle this in inside of a bird's wing. And suddenly you get fentanyl. It's the iron law of prohibition. And one of the best examples of it is when you can't take liquor and beer into a stadium. Well, you'd like to have a beer while you watch a game. What did people used to do? I know what we did in college. I didn't see anybody smuggling a keg or a 12-pack of beer into a football game with them. What did they do? They took a hip flask of the strongest alcohol they could find so they could just buy a Coke and mix it in there. They actually ended up ingesting a stronger, more potent intoxicant because of the regulations keeping the beer out. You know what I'm saying? This letter goes on to say they have also found to have THC. In fact, recent testing has found that some products being sold as hemp contain as much as 80% THC, extremely high and dangerous levels. Here's where I think it goes off the rails. And again, I'm telling you, I can see both sides of this. There were people who will disagree with me on what I'm about to say, and I don't blame you. It's a natural reaction. I even have a little bit of trouble with it, to be honest with you, saying what I'm going to say. The next line is, thankfully, our Mississippi legislature is attempting to regulate this dangerous product, at least to ensure that it is tested and can't be sold to children, exclamation point. Now, this is the same argument that they have used for kratom. It's the same argument that they've used for marijuana for the last 50 years, for all other things for the last 100 years. They're going to keep you safe. Don't worry, the Mississippi legislature is on the case, and when they get done with this, you know what's going to happen next year? Another product is going to pop up, and they are going to continue to play whack-a-mole with this stuff. People have been getting intoxicated since the dawn of man, and they will always get intoxicated to some point. And to anybody who really judges all of us for that, I ask, how many glasses of wine do you have when you want to, air quotes here in the studio, unwind from a long week in work? This is just one of the things humans do. They alter their consciousness through a whole bunch of different ways. But again, I understand the idea that this is scary, that this stuff could be in stores, and it needs to be. You know, if you want to protest a store that's caught selling this stuff to kids, I'm down with that. It is just this endless regulation and this endless game of whack-a-mole of, we found another thing that we don't like that might be used for a bad purpose, so we're going to stamp it out and regulate it and tax it and all that other stuff. It goes down in here. I tell you what, I got to take a break. I'm going to finish on just a couple other little sentences out of this. Because it's just another one of these things. This letter could be put out every 3 years about the new product. What have we had now? We've had bath salts. Why were people turning to bath salts in the first place? I'll tell you what, I have been a party guy in my past life. Never really attracted to the idea of bath salts, just a chemical thing. Why do you think people smoke crystal meth? For the flavor? No, because they've cracked down and regulated everything else so much that people went, I don't know, is there anything around here in the kitchen we could mix up together and get high? That's essentially what crystal meth is. It's kitchen products and poisons mixed together to get a buzz because you can't go to a store and get a joint. So these things are, and again, one of the greatest sayings ever is, there are no solutions, there are only trade-offs. So when you crack down on one thing, you just create some other problem that you have to address, and then the next one, it creates the next problem, and you crack down on that, and it's the next problem, when it could be as easy as just saying, look, there's stuff out there, parents. You need to pay attention. You need to, I hate to say it, you're going to have to parent a little bit here. All right, I'll finish up this piece when we come back. Woke up in my clothes to come this morning. All right, final segment. I got to boogie through the rest of this thing. I knew once I got talking about this, I could probably have done a whole show on it. Probably maybe a good thing I filled up the first part of the show with something else. But this piece goes on. This is about regulating these hemp products here in the state of Mississippi. House Bill 1676 would also require intoxicating hemp only to be sold in medical cannabis establishments, which would reduce the locations where it can be sold from nearly 2,000 to approximately 150 existing medical facilities, effectively preventing, quote, pot shops, unquote, on every corner in our state. Now, here's where it gets almost funny. This goes on to say this again, you got to turn this over to the legislature. Let the legislature do something. Support this bill. We need to ban this. We need to ban kratom. We need to ban, you know, that's what they do. They need to ban everything because they love your children more than they're more concerned about your children than you are. They're the ones tasked to do it. I mean, let's be honest with it. We want the government to ban all this stuff for our kids so that we don't really have to pay attention. I don't want to have to talk to my kids about it. I don't want to have to go through their room. I don't want to have to look at their eyes. Just let the government ban it, and then I can just assume my kids are always safe because the government's on the job. But here's where it gets kind of funny. They say, this will provide maximum control over the sale and use of any cannabis or hemp-related products. Another recent study, this is what they say, another recent study found that 14% of high school seniors in the Southeast are using legal intoxicating hemp because they are currently allowed to buy it from locations all over the state without even showing proof of age. We must fix this! Exclamation point. I don't know what was going on in your high school when you were a senior. Admittedly, I am a child of public education, but it was some of the private schools that were known when I was a senior to have the best drugs. And that 14% of kids using this legal intoxicating hemp, that seems low to me. My experience in high school, particularly my senior year, between my public school and all of the Northeast Jackson private schools, the number was far higher than 14% were either on weed, ecstasy, cocaine, or a lot of liquor. And that was all with a lot of regulations and a lot of control on it over the from the state. Kids were still doing that stuff. Am I saying that's a good thing? No. If you're a teenager listening to me, I'm telling you, it will hurt your brain. We can sit down a little bit. I can tell you, you don't want to end up being a middle-aged libertarian radio show host, for the love of God. Take care of yourself. Stay away from drugs. I wasn't a big drug user or anything, but I partied. I was more of a drinker. Kids do these illegal things. It was my parents' job to keep me away from it, and they did a pretty darn good job. I never went too far. I never got hooked on any hard drugs. I never did anything when I was around them. I snuck around like a respectable child and tried to get away with things. I put a lot of effort into getting away with things, as a child should. It keeps you from really going too far. I knew where that line was. But the bottom line is, parents have got a parent. All of those things I just mentioned that were prevalent in the high school when I was a senior were all illegal. They were all controlled. There weren't even medical cannabis shops back there. There was weed everywhere my senior year of high school. Everywhere. It's still everywhere. And it always will be everywhere. So again, I understand, and probably a lot of people will disagree. Well, Mike, I mean, this is targeting kids. Look, I get it. I'm not mad at anybody who disagrees with me on this and wants the legislature to do something. I understand it. I really do. It feels like something that the government should do, but the government keeps doing these things. And is it fixed anything? It's hemp today. What will it be tomorrow? It was bath salts 10 years ago. What will it be 10 years from now? It will be something else. There's such a better way to fight this, and it is not constant laws and regulations by a political class that thinks they know what's best for all of us. That I'm just getting sick of. That's all the time I've got. Hope you have a great one, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye. No, you, and when it's time, no handle.